The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Venaria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Venaria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
I'm in New York. I was on American Reports, like I said, for 30 seconds, and then they had to go to breaking news. But that's okay. That's what happens. It's the game. It's all good. And it's great to be with you on what is a busy day. I was watching the White House press briefing with Caroline Leavitt as yet another judge came out and ruled against the president on tariffs. And that happened yesterday. And you know what's amazing about all of this is that the Democrats keep screwing up badly. Badly. I mean, obviously. And they're terrible. And yet the judges keep jumping in and distracting everybody from all of the horrible things that that they're doing. So I am of the opinion that these judges right now are purposely just trying to slow things down to get to midterms. Everybody is just trying to slow things down and they can see the other side of this, because it's getting to a point now where you really can't count on the Republicans in Congress to get the job done. We see that right now with the One Big Beautiful Bill. And instead of us talking about that, we're talking about judges. And instead of us talking about how horrible the Democrats are, we're talking about judges. We're talking about court orders and rulings. Now, these court orders and rulings are going to eventually, in my opinion, go the president's way. But the goal here is to slow all this down, and the goal here is to take attention off of everything that the Democrats are doing wrong. And that's a key part of this, because the Democrats are screwing up everything. And I mean everything. Let's think about the whole Biden scandal for a second, which is what I was supposed to talk about on America Reports a few minutes ago. So we have all this information that's coming out about Dr. and you always have to say that by law, Dr. Jill Biden, and how she knew that her husband had dementia. I mean, obviously, how could she not? And she knew he had cancer, and yet she kept him up there. She propped him up, and everybody's pointing at Dr. Jill. But please don't get distracted by that fact, because she had no legal authority here to do anything. Nothing. I mean, there's no role in the Constitution for a first lady. It's nice, or a first gentleman, or a first gumata, or in Kennedy's case, the ninth gumata, whatever. There's no constitutional role for this. So while Jill Biden is guilty of elder abuse, she's not guilty of committing an offense to the United States Constitution. And that's important to note. However, the same cannot be said for the vice president of the United States of America at the time, Kamala Harris. Nor can it be said for the members of the president's cabinet, who had a constitutional responsibility under the 25th Amendment to remove the guy who had control of the nuclear codes. You may be of the impression, which is totally understandable, that if the president orders a nuclear strike, there's a sequence of events that happens, and it includes somebody having to say, yeah, I agree. I don't know. Maybe you think that. I'm always, as a kid of the 80s, I remember War Games. You remember the opening scene of War Games has the two guys in the missile silo? And the missile silo, the one guy orders the other guy to turn the key and launch the missile strike, and then the other guy doesn't do it, and then he points a gun at him, and then it turns out that it was actually not, you know, like the missile, they should have launched, but it was a test or something. I don't know, whatever it was. So they replace all the guys in the silos with the Whopper, the computer. And the whole point of War Games is that here's this kid, Matthew Broderick, who hacks into the Whopper, and he's able to play this game. How about a nice game of chess? And next thing you know, they're playing global thermonuclear war. Okay. I think some people assume that when the president decides to launch nuclear missiles, that there's another guy who has to turn the key at the same time. That's not how it works. In fact, it's kind of symbolic in that movie in the sense of they take the guys out of the equation of the nuclear missile silo, and they replace them with a computer because the human error aspect of it, the whole point is that these nuclear missiles can travel incredible speeds, and I have no idea and none of us really do, how fast they're really capable of going in this day and age, because it's all classified now. And but we know that they can travel very, very quickly. And we know that the whole point is for the president to be able to react before we're decimated. So that's the whole goal. They create this system in the 1950s after we drop bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki to figure out, okay, what do we do in the event of global thermonuclear war? And what they figured out was, hey, we don't have time for a vote. We don't have time for a debate. We've got 15 minutes maybe till their missiles hit our missiles and wipe out our ability to do a counterstrike. So we don't have time to debate. We don't have time to get a vote. We don't have time to bring the cabinet in and sit around the room and let everybody, express their feelings. We have to make a decision. Because the fear is always that, at the time anyway, the Soviets will launch their entire nuclear missile supply. They'll aim them for our silos, and then we have nothing to hit back with, and then they control the world. So you have to have the president have the ability to say, strike, unload, unleash everything. And what you can't have is somebody who goes, but Mr. President, what if it's not really real? Like, what if it's a game? What if it's a kid playing a game? Now, in war games, they take the president out of it. For the purposes of the drama, of the effect of the movie, the president is not in it. So it's this guy who's in charge of NORAD who ultimately has to make the decision. And that's where the movie, in my opinion, does not live up to the reality of the situation. Because it's the president's call and ultimately the president's call. And I'm pretty sure at the end of the movie, although I haven't seen War Games in a while, he's on the phone and the president's looking to him for advice. And he tells the president, we should stand down. So maybe I'm not giving War Games its proper due. And maybe it is accurate in that sense. And I just have to rewatch it. But you get my point. The guy at NORAD doesn't have the ability to say to the president, no, nor does the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, nor does anybody. There was even a case of a soldier in the 1970s who was questioned. He was a high-ranking official, whether or not they could say no to Richard Nixon if Richard Nixon ever launched nuclear missiles. And for that, he was court-martialed, just for even asking the question. So the whole point is that if you're thinking there has to be somebody else, there doesn't. Now, you get into that 2 a.m., 3 a.m. scenario or 3 p.m. scenario. Now, the president of the United States of America decides, I'm going to launch nuclear missiles against Vladimir Putin because I've heard reports that he is launching missiles at us because the president's senile, and he orders a strike, and everybody's looking around going, we know the frigging guy's senile. What do we do? Those same people might be thinking, but what if he's having one of his lucid moments right now and we should do this? And other people may be thinking we shouldn't. But the people that are thinking we shouldn't are also probably thinking that they could be destroyed in nuclear Armageddon, or they could be court-martialed if they don't do what the president is ordering them to do. Because, there's always the thing about, president can't give an unlawful command. But launching nukes doesn't have that same ability in the sense of, is this an illegal order or not? Because it can't, because you can't have a debate. Because you don't have time to have a debate. There's a great scene in Oppenheimer, and I don't know how historically accurate that scene is, but there's a scene in Oppenheimer where Robert Oppenheimer goes into the Oval Office and meets with Harry Truman. And he says to President Truman that he regrets the fact that we used the nuclear missiles and or bombs, I should say, in Japan. And Truman pulls out a handkerchief and waves it at him and accuses Robert Oppenheimer of being a crybaby and says, you didn't make the decision to use these missiles or use these bombs. I did. I made this decision. Not you. I did. And he kicks him out of the Oval Office. Point being, you had a president who was senile. And the only guy who could launch nuclear missiles and make that decision with no ability lawfully for anybody to override him. And they kept him in charge as the commander in chief of the United States military the entire time. And I don't think we're paying enough attention to that. I don't think we're having enough conversations about that. You see, when Donald Trump was president, PBS with Judy Woodruff back then did a whole thing about this because they were all scared to death that Trump was going to lose his mind over a tweet and decide to launch nuclear missiles. I mean, Hillary Clinton ran on this. Hillary Clinton actually had, when she was running for president in 2016, I remember this commercial. She had a guy who was in one of the missile silos. That was his job. He worked for the Air Force, and he was one of the guys. And he was saying how Donald Trump is a threat. He's going to wind up causing global nuclear war, and we cannot rely on him, and he can't be president. So it's like 2017, 2018 or something, he's president. And then all of a sudden, there's all this renewed interest in the fact that there is no ability for anyone to say no to the president. And PBS NewsHour brings on this whole panel of experts, and they all give their opinions and their theories, but it all comes back to one crystal clear conclusion. No one can override the president. They could all think he's nuts for doing it, but they can't override him. And of course, there's scenarios whereby which they do, in which case then you have a coup. I mean, it's a coup d'etat. You've committed a coup against the president of the United States of America. And all of those people, if you're dealing with a president who's sane, would be subject to court-martial and potentially treason and could get the death penalty for committing treason against the United States of America because they did not follow the orders of the commander-in-chief in the chain of command under the command and control process that was established during the Cold War. Now, we could all sit here and argue, maybe, just maybe, Congress should revisit this, take a look at it. But until they do, it's the president's decision. And what I find interesting is that while Trump was president and they had all of these specials out and all these people and all these experts going on shows and everybody else, all these people, they were terrified of what Trump could do, but none of them said a word when Biden was president, nor are any of them saying a word now that Biden is not president. We're talking about auto pens. We're talking about executive orders. And all of that is good, and we should. But we're not talking about the fact that Joe Biden had the ability to destroy humanity. And they let him have that ability, or they didn't, and they took away the nuclear codes from him. And I was joking around with Jimmy Failla earlier about this, and they gave him like a Fisher-Price nuclear codes, like I would give Reagan. Like Reagan has a Fisher-Price phone, you know? You remember this when you were kids, right? You push the buttons and everything, and you pretend to call. And kids are great with their imaginations. They can pretend anything is real. So when me and my daughter have tea parties, and we do tea parties all the time, we drink from our little teacups, and you know she thinks it's very real. And maybe they did with Joe Biden. Maybe they gave him fake nuclear codes, and maybe he would crack them open, and he'd give the command on his little Fisher-Price phone, and they go, uh-huh, we got you, Mr. President. But in which case, then, that's also really problematic for our country, that the commander-in-chief, they knew, did not have his mental faculties, and they took steps to protect America from a senile president who may think we're under attack and launch nuclear missiles. Or may launch nuclear missiles because he's had it with Vladimir Putin and just thinks that this is the end because he heard voices or he heard Harry Truman or he talked to Truman literally on the Truman balcony. And Truman was telling him what it was like to drop the atomic bombs. And Biden's like, let's unleash hell, whatever it is. And we're not talking about that. And that really bothers me. Because we can have all these conversations about Jill Biden, Dr. Jill Biden, who was absolutely, in my opinion, guilty of elder abuse against her husband. She left her husband in there because she loved flying in Air Force One, and she loved being the first lady, and she loved it all, and she knew he was senile, and she knew he was dementia, but she had zero responsibility under the law or the Constitution to do anything about it. However, you can't say that about Kamala Harris. You can't say that about the Secretary of Defense or any of the other cabinet members. Because at some point, they realized, we realized as a country, that we need a mechanism to deal with a president who cannot do the job. And this is not a matter of impeachment, which is a quasi-criminal. I mean, it's not criminal in the sense of a criminal court, but, you know, that's a criminal matter. through the eyes of Congress, high crimes, bribery, misdemeanors, et cetera. But how do you deal with a president who cannot do the job? Is it a coma, a stroke, lost his mind, is under anesthesia, whatever it is? And the 25th Amendment exists for that purpose, so that the vice president can call the cabinet and say, we have a problem here. There's another great movie that I love called Air Force One with Harrison Ford. And again, I don't know how realistic that movie is, but it's fun. It's a lot of fun to watch. And there's a scene where Glenn Close plays the vice president, and she has the cabinet in there. And the argument from, I think it's the Secretary of Defense in the movie, says the president is not acting like a president. He's making decisions as a father and a husband, and therefore we need to remove him as president under the 25th Amendment. Now, it's way more dramatic in the movie because obviously there's a provision within the 25th Amendment for the president to take his power back, for Congress to give the power back to the president. There's fail-safes within the 25th Amendment. But the movie is Hollywood. It's dramatic, and it ends with Harrison Ford obviously kicking the bad Secret Service agent who was the terrorist off the plane. You know, the famous line, "Get off my plane." And then the pilot saying that whatever the plane was has a new call sign. The call sign is now Air Force One, because now the president is on the plane that they sent to rescue him. And whatever plane the president's on is Air Force One. And so she rips up the paper, the vote of the cabinet, to invoke the 25th Amendment against the president. And it's a big Hollywood ending and everybody's happy. And, you know. But in real life, there's questions about when the president has to go and have serious surgery. So we all remember when President Reagan was shot. We remember that Vice President George H.W. Bush was on Air Force One. We remember the famous issue with Alexander Haig coming to the White House podium and saying that he was in charge. And there was this whole question about who is in charge. Is it the vice president? Because they had not invoked the 25th Amendment after the president was shot. He was obviously getting major surgery and had to be under serious anesthesia because you can't operate on a man who's just been shot without anesthesia. That would be just very, very cruel. They didn't really know. And there were all these opinions back and forth. The attorney general gets involved. And the point being, though, that was a couple of hours. That was one day. Reagan was shot. One day he's under anesthesia, he's getting surgery. But at that moment, they realized we have to figure out this process because we need to be able to have a system in place for if the president is unreachable, if the president is incapacitated, and we don't have time to bring the cabinet together and do the 25th Amendment and do the whole process. So who becomes in charge? Who takes the command authority? And this became an issue during 9/11, obviously. With Joe Biden, they had plenty of time. They had all the time in the world. They had years. They had months. They had all the time to do what the Constitution, in my opinion, required, which was for them to remove him as president of the United States. And as all these books come out now and they tell us how Joe Biden had dementia and Joe Biden was senile and Joe Biden didn't recognize his national security advisor and Joe Biden didn't know what was going on and who was alive and who was dead, nothing changed insofar as what the law empowers him to do, which is to launch nuclear weapons. And maybe someday somebody will write a book about how close we came. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe not. But we can't even get the truth on Jeffrey Epstein. But at no point did they ever assemble the cabinet and say, we have to deal with this fact, right? We got to deal with the fact that even though he's the president, and even though we think Joe Biden is the only guy that has a chance of beating Donald Trump, he's senile. And he's the commander in chief. And what happens if something goes wrong and this guy's got to make a decision? And maybe they had a meeting and they decided, OK, in that case, then we won't do anything unless the vice president signs off, or we won't do anything unless the Secretary of Defense signs off. But that's not how it's supposed to be. And for good reason. Because in those crucial moments you have, there's no time for debate. So what would have happened theoretically if Joe Biden was having one of his lucid moments and we were under attack and Joe Biden ordered the missiles to be deployed And Kamala Harris said no. And the Secretary of Defense said no. And we lost. And the Soviet Union or Russia won or China won or whatever scenario. Because they didn't think he was up to making that decision. And there's a reason why we don't allow other people to get involved in the chain of command on that, because we can't have time for a debate. And we, as Americans, have to trust that we've elected the person who will do the job and make the right call in the right moment. And that guy could not make the right call in any moment. Literally, not even with the Easter Bunny, who we thought was real. So I want us to focus on this, and I'm glad that Comer's bringing all these people in. And what I would like is for Republicans to start having those conversations, because this is bad. This is really bad. You know, it's easy to look back in hindsight and go, well, nothing bad happened, so therefore, come on, Zeoli, you're being dramatic. But am I? Just because nothing bad happened doesn't mean that nothing bad could have happened, or that we didn't come close to something bad happening. And that's all beside the point, because the point is that if you don't have a president who has his faculties and can make those decisions, then he should be removed under the 25th Amendment. And they did not do that. It doesn't matter if anything bad happened or not. That was what the Constitution required of these people. And we're not having that conversation. We're talking about Joe Biden, and that's fine. And we're talking about Ron Klain, and we're talking about the White House physician. And we're talking about, what about the cabinet members? What about the vice president? What about all these people? And I have a serious question to ask. Why are we not talking about impeaching Kamala Harris for not invoking the 25th Amendment against Joe Biden? Why are we not having that conversation right now? Why are we not talking about impeaching all the cabinet members who did not invoke the 25th Amendment against the senile president of the United States of America with the sole ability to launch nuclear Armageddon? Because they left office does not mean Congress cannot impeach them. They still can. And maybe they should. And maybe we should actually have this trial in the Senate so that this never happens again in American history. So that if in the future we're dealing with a president who's lost his freaking marbles, they'll understand that the 25th Amendment is not a suggestion. 25th Amendment is not a convenience. The 25th Amendment is a constitutional amendment that requires the vice president and a majority of the cabinet to decide if the president is able to do the job. That is the big story of the hour, brought to you by our buddy Dr. Mike Vanaria, VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile. VanariaDental.com, VanariaDental.com, with two locations to serve you in Cinnaminson and Woodbury. Make sure that Dr. Mike is your go-to guy for your smile. We've got a lot to chat about today. Don't go away.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
The great Dennis Miller. I'll tell you, one of my true honors was when I got to introduce him in, I think it was Reading and also Wilkes-Barre. That was fun. It was when he and Mark Stein were doing their adorable Deplorables tour. Remember that? The adorable Deplorables tour. That was fun. So anyway, a lot to get to today. I want to just right away give a huge shout out. Our new sponsor, Tri-County Auto Group, Brian Krieger. So this morning, our buddy Ryan Mannion sends me a picture. Do we have that picture we can throw up in the YouTube chat, Justin?
Yeah, grabbing it right now.
So she sends me a picture. Ryan Mannion, of course, who is the president of the Travis Mannion Foundation, our great friends, the Travis Mannion Foundation. And Ryan sends me a picture. She's got this beautiful, she's in front of this beautiful Jeep along with Brian Krieger and a guy who works at Tri-County Auto Group. She had reached out to me last week and she said, hey, you know, do you think they'd give me do you think they'd give Travis Mannion Foundation a good deal or something? I said, yeah, I'm sure they would. You know, they're so generous and everything. Well, they donated that Jeep. Tri-County Auto donated that Jeep that you see in the YouTube chat to the Travis Mannion Foundation. And I just thought that was amazing. And I said, man, that is just true generosity right there. So do you have it up there? See, I'm delayed on YouTube.
Is it up there? Loaded up in a second.
We're having a pain.
No, is it being a pain? Everything's being a pain. There's always... What's that?
I was going to say, my computer... I mean, I don't want to jinx it, but mine's actually working properly today.
What? Which one isn't? Which Odyssey computer is not working
the
properly
is the
question.
The one that we primarily rely upon seems to be the troublemaker right now.
Mm-hmm. All right,
pictures
well,
up, Justin.
Pictures, yeah, pictures up. Now.
Pictures up. All right, so you can see... I hate this friggin' delay on YouTube. I don't know. Why can't they fix that? It's not you guys. That's you. That's a YouTube thing. But I got to wait like 7 seconds. Or there it is. All right. So you see Ryan. She's got her Eagles gear. And that's a beautiful white Jeep Wrangler that they donated to the Travis Benning Foundation. And there's Brian Krieger to her right. Isn't that cool? I mean, that's very impressive. So what I'm saying is, I'm saying that if you're thinking about buying a car... not only are they a sponsor, but the fact that they donated that is just absolutely amazing. So I just wanted to say thank you to that. That's Jack to the left, Tri-County Dodge, Jeep, Ram, and Chrysler. So thank you for doing that, Brian. Thank you very much for supporting the Travis Manning Foundation with that donation. It's not Ryan's personal vehicle. It was for the foundation. So that's great. All right. I got a bunch of audio to get to and a bunch of other news to get to and a bunch of stuff to get to. But I don't want to just gloss past this point because not only am I the only one making it, as usual, you know, my ability to talk about things that eventually everybody will talk about is pretty, you know, unprecedented. But my ability to get bumped on Fox News, also pretty impressive, if you ask me. They had a whole conversation back in on PBS News with Judy Woodruff and Duke University's Peter Fever and also James Clapper. James Clapper, who should have been in prison, should still be in prison for lying to Congress about the fact that they were spying on the American people. But it was this whole thing about, and this is again, this is they were all panicked about Donald Trump, and they were trying to terrify the American people, so they kept doing all these specials about this. And this is from that segment that they did. So let's begin with Cut 23, Part 1. Can the president launch a nuclear strike on his own? Take a listen.
During the Cold War, the U.S. military built an elaborate system to control the thousands of nuclear weapons in this country. There are many checks and balances. No officers who work with intercontinental ballistic missiles, nuclear-armed aircraft, or nuclear submarines can launch missiles alone. They always work in twos or sometimes entire teams. But there is an exception to that. The entire system is designed to respond to the sole decision of the president. This week, after watching President Trump's campaign rally in Phoenix, the former director of national intelligence, retired General James Clapper, said on CNN that the president could be a threat to national security.
Having some understanding of the levers that a president can exercise, I worry about, frankly, the access to nuclear codes. If he, in a fit of pique, he decides to do something about Kim Jong-un, there's actually very little to stop him. The whole system's built to ensure a rapid response if necessary. So there are very little in the way of controls over exercising a nuclear option, which is pretty damn scary.
Apparently not, because we had a senile president and nobody was scared of this. Nobody was afraid of this, which meant either these people were just really running the government, running the country, and just kept Joe Biden out of it, or they were just rolling the dice, rolling the dice that nothing would go wrong. But isn't it something? In the years that Donald Trump was the president, we were all supposed to be terrified that Donald Trump and Donald Trump alone could fire off a tweet and then fire off nuclear missiles. We used to have a joke on the afternoon show back then when I was still in afternoon drive where we would play a sound effect and I would be Trump reading a mean tweet and then we'd play the boom sound of a nuclear like blowing up because it was so stupid. It was such a stupid idea that Trump was going to just decide to just, you know, launch nuclear missiles. But that's what we were supposed to be afraid of. And here we had a situation of a president who was senile. And all these books are coming out now about how Joe Biden was senile and didn't recognize his national security advisor. And all these people who are telling us Joe Biden was fine, who are now coming out and telling us Joe Biden was not fine. And everybody's pointing the finger and blaming Dr. Jill Biden. And you can and you should. And I'm not suggesting that you don't. But she had no constitutional requirement to do a damn thing about it. And the people that did have a constitutional requirement to do something about it under the 25th Amendment did nothing. And those people, in my opinion, should absolutely 100% be held accountable, because this isn't just simply a matter of the auto pen, and this simply isn't just a matter of executive orders. This is a matter of putting our entire nation and world at risk with a senile president. But again, that was then. You had to be very, very afraid of Donald Trump. So Judy Woodruff continues as she talks to Duke University's Peter Fever, who's written about the president's powers with the nuclear codes. Cut 24.
What has to happen before the United States launches a nuclear attack on another country?
Well, the president has to give a lawful order, and that order has to be authentic and be seen as authentic, because it's validated by a code that he has carried with him or near his person at all times. And that order has to pass through the chain of command down to the subordinate elements where the nuclear weapons and the nuclear tipped missiles, the nuclear capable bombers, the submarines are. And that command would receive that authentic order and then launch accordingly.
How many people are involved, and at what level are they?
Well, it depends on the scenario, but it's true that the president doesn't have to have his order okayed by another person, that there's not a two-man rule at the very top. The president alone makes the decision, but the president alone cannot carry out the decision. That decision has to be carried out by many, many people further down in the chain of command. So for the question that raised by General Clapper's concern, context matters. There's ample opportunity for the rest of the system to put pressure, change the president's mind on under a scenario of, say, preventive war, where the president and his team is trying to decide, do we launch an attack against a country before they cross some proliferation threshold? That was a decision that would take weeks or months, and there's plenty of opportunity for the president's advisors to shape that decision.
You're saying there are checks and balances in the decision-making process leading up to the point where the president makes the decision, but after that, less so.
After that, the system is designed to move very, very quickly.
After that, the system is designed to move very, very quickly. So, in other words, they can try to talk him out of it. They could suggest that he doesn't do it, but they have to do it by law. See, and this is a key point. And I mean, I'm not saying you should torture yourself and watch the entire PBS special, but I did. Because in order to prepare, I know we joke that I don't really do show prep and I don't, but I did today. All right. So it's like one of those rare occasions where anyway, I decided today, as I was on my way up to Fox News to do my 30-second hit on America Reports before I got bumped, I decided to actually watch that PBS special because I had time to kill. And, you know, normally when you come to Fox News, they're gracious. They offer to send you a car, and they did today. But I just felt like taking the train. And I said, no, I'm all right. I'm good. I want to take the train up, because sometimes, I don't know. It's like when you're driving in a car with somebody, and you know me, I am a bit of a talker. You start getting into conversations. Next thing you know, you're at the Lincoln Tunnel, and you haven't done a damn thing of prep, right? So I said, you know, I'm going to take the train today. So I took the train up to New York, and I watched this episode. And it's very clear that there's serious legal consequences for people that don't carry out the president's order. In other words, while all of what that professor said is fun and nice and it's all good and it makes you feel good and go, well, you know, there's people that could talk to him and they could give their opinion and but there's serious legal consequences if they don't carry out the order to the point of potentially not just court-martial, if they're in the military, but treason, it's bad. Designed to be bad. Because, again, the whole point is we don't have time for a debate, and you don't get to overrule me. I'm the commander-in-chief. I'm the president. When Trump was around, it was a very, very acute fear because we had to keep hearing the fear-mongering of Donald Trump and how he's going to blow up the world. With Joe Biden, that was literally a potential problem. That was literally a potential threat to America. It was a clear and present danger to America. If you've ever read the book Clear and Present Danger by Tom Clancy, or you saw the movie, which, of course, was ruined by Ben Affleck. Why they cast him as Jack Ryan, I don't know. But anyway, and the whole thing is that he's got to convince the president of Russia not to attack America, that he needs to stand down, that that's the whole plot of it. But it still comes down to, if there was a coup, you know, and they pushed Putin out and the hardliners took over the Soviet Union and decided that they were tired of this war in Ukraine and decided to launch a nuclear missile, and Joe Biden wanted to react and somebody below him said no and we didn't react, and then our nuclear sites were all wiped out, then all those people, if they were left, would face serious legal consequences. They could not argue at that point, well, we actually think the president's senile. It'd be too late for that. Mainly because we'd probably all be dead. There's that. But looking right now at the state of the reality of the media as they come to grips with just how bad Joe Biden was, I'm just amazed at how we're all pretending like this is not and should not have been America's greatest concern for the entire time that Joe Biden was president. I mean, we spent a lot of time talking about pardons. And yeah, I understand he pardoned some bad people, and I understand that he pardoned people that annoy us, like Fauci and the January 6 people and everybody else. But Congress can still bring them in front of their committee, and now they lose their protection under the Fifth Amendment against self-incrimination. So I mean, if Congress had any cojones, they would have already brought in Fauci, put him under oath, and asked him about why he lied about the COVID lab leak. They would have brought in Liz Cheney. They would have brought in Adam Kinzinger. They would have brought these people in. They're never going to do so. They don't have the cojones to do that. But if there was a nuclear war, there's no chance for Congress to go back and bring in the people and have the conversation, because we're all dead. Humanity's wiped out. It's global thermonuclear war. The fact that that's not getting more attention, as Jake Tapper and Alex Thompson write their book and more details come out, really says a lot about not only just the state of our current political affairs, but says a lot about people that are willing to do whatever it takes to stay in power. And that's amazing to me, that these people would be willing to keep a senile commander in chief in power. But I think deep down inside, they had lots of fail safes in place should something really happen, in which case then we have to come to the realization that Joe Biden was not the president and Joe Biden was not in charge. And you can auto-pen this all day you want. Thank God nothing bad really happened. So, we'll just let them all off the hook, right? No big whoop. No harm, no foul. Nothing bad happened, so don't worry about it. No big deal. I don't think so. And I don't think the Republicans should let this one go. This is the greatest scandal in American political history. This is nothing like Watergate. Watergate, at no point was Richard Nixon not lucid during Watergate. And then you could argue that he was, he drank a little too much and he cursed a lot. He said a lot of things on tape that he probably later in life wished they never had on tape. But at no point was there really a conversation of, can this guy do the job? And that's what we had with Joe Biden. We had that. And it's a very scary proposition, no doubt about it. Listen, Dr. Mike Veneria, my dentist, my friend, the master of dental implants, he's going to give you the smile of your dreams. What are you waiting for? You've been putting it off. Stop putting it off and go see Dr. Mike today. So simple. All you got to do is call him. 856-786-2020 or go to VeneriaDental.com. I've been putting off that complicated dental procedure. Stop putting it off and go see Dr. Mike today. Two offices to serve you, Cinnaminson and Woodbury. And Dr. Mike's going to give you the smile that you deserve, a beautiful smile, because everybody deserves a beautiful smile in life, right? Of course. And there's something else. With all this talk about MAHA that we keep hearing, the Make America Healthy Again movement, there's a lot of talk about something called the gut microbiome, which most of us had never heard of before. But there's a link between your mouth health and your gut microbiome health. And the point is, you can't neglect your mouth health. So if you've been putting off seeing a dentist, you got to see a dentist twice a year. And Dr. Mike, for 10 years in a row, 10 consecutive years, has been named as a master of dental implants among his peers. simply no one better. He's my dentist, my family's dentist. We all go see Dr. Mike, so make him your dentist, too, by going to VanariaDental.com, V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VanariaDental.com. I hate that I can't talk over the music anymore. It stinks. Matt DeSantis, I'm told our podcast numbers are still legit.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
That's what I'm told, anyway. So, that's what I hear.
I can't see how we're doing in Ethiopia any longer, though. They changed our podcast platform, and it's not as interactive for the producers. Unfortunately, I'm not sure if we've gained ground in Ethiopia. Last I checked, which I guess was late last year when they made the switch, we were holding strong with that one Ethiopian listener. I am a bit terrified, though, that we haven't catered enough to him or her. We haven't done Ethiopian news in quite some time.
Yeah. We probably should do something with Ethiopian news, don't you think?
Yeah, it used to be on Fridays, yeah. And I feel like tomorrow's Friday. Maybe we dedicate a segment specifically to that listener.
Some of all fears. Damn it. Ed Farmer calling me out on Twitter. It's not clear and present danger. Some of all fears.
Yeah, that's the one movie before 2000 that I've seen, and that's Harrison Ford. Clear and present danger is good.
Clear and present danger would be good, except for one glaring obvious problem with the movie.
What's that?
Ben Affleck is what that is.
No, Clear and Present Danger is Harrison Ford.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Some of All Fears.
No, Some of All Fears is not good.
No, it's not good. It's stupid. No, Clear and Present Danger is a great movie. Oh, it's fantastic, yeah.
Patriot Games is also pretty good.
That's, all the Tom Clancy movies with Harrison Ford were good, and The Hunt for Red October is great, even though it's with Alec Baldwin.
Also, that has Sean Connery in it too, though, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, he cancels out Baldwin.
Yeah, no, but I mean, I hate Alec Baldwin, but he's a good actor. He's talented, and there's lots of things he's done that I think he was fantastic in. But Ben Affleck's just awful. He's awful as a person. He's an awful actor. He's an awful husband. Everything.
He's got some decent movies.
Name one.
Good Will Hunting. I've said it a million times.
Overrated.
Top three favorite movies.
Overrated. Depressing. Overrated movie.
It's not depressing. It has a happy ending.
Stupid ending. Give me another one.
No, there's other ones.
Batman vs. Superman?
No, that one's terrible.
Okay, Jiggly?
No, that's, I think, universally viewed as one of the worst films of all time. But two others come to mind, and I think you're going to hate one of them, so I'll save that one for last. But The Town is very good with Jeremy Renner.
The Town is good. I'll give you that. The Town's a good movie. He doesn't ruin that movie completely. That's a good movie. All right.
The other one, I think you're going to take exception to this, but I enjoyed Gone Girl. Well, I knew you weren't going to agree with me. What about Argo?
Wait a second. These movies were good movies because of everybody else who's in them. But his presence in the movie detracts from how great. In other words, The Town, Gone Girl, and Argo would have been 1,000 times better without Ben Affleck in the movie. You see what I'm saying?
He won an Oscar for Argo and for Good Will.
You're the only one who cares about who wins Oscars. Justin, back me up here because you're an Ivy League freaking weirdo. Nobody else cares. No, literally no one.
Those are good movies.
Oscar. No one cares about Oscars.
Nobody cares about the Oscars. I don't know what to tell you, bud.
I mean, I feel like the Oscars had more clout in the early or the late 1990s, early 2000s when those movies won Best Picture.
Well, it's 2025. Get with the program.
Well, they carry clout when Argo especially won, and certainly when Good Will Hunting won, which had to be in the mid 90s. I guess that didn't win Best Picture, but. Or did it win Best Picture?
You know what you sound like? You sound like the most annoying guy at a trivia game right now. That's what you sound like.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.